reasonable, moderate conversation, Johnny. Talk about that. We were just having an off-the-air conversation about being reasonable. We're talking about...
Well, even moderate can be like, that means you're like lukewarm. That's what a lot of people say. Like, if you're moderate on something, like, you just don't want to take a stand on either side or whatever.
Yeah.
You get accused of that. We're like, well, I can see both sides of this. Really?
Can you now?
Choose a side!
Yeah.
You know.
Johnny, I choose the right side.
I find fault. I do. I find fault with a lot of, like, that whole thing is like, we just get deeply entrenched and we only... You know, people Google until they find something that supports their position, and that's the one they go, well, that's it. I found the thing. Like, I'm doing more of that where I'm trying to go, let's keep digging. Let's keep digging. Okay, there's enough to support my bias. Now let's keep digging and see if there's something else. And I don't know.
Dude, preachers do it all the time. I look back at a lot of my old sermons, and I cringe now because of that very thing that I went and found something. Not that I went and found, but I found something that I made it a big thing. I was reading in Psalms the other day about streams in the desert and other stuff. I remember doing a whole big sermon on that. And I may not have been in the context of what that psalm, it was such a great metaphor.
Yeah.
You know, and I applied it to everything. So,
you were probably weed eating.
Right.
And you're like,
Lord, I need you.
Yeah.
Bring some streams. This is exactly what David meant. He was weed eating.
He knew. Yeah, he was weed eating.
It's right there in the Hebrew.
You know, in the Old Testament, how they weeded it was they tied foxes' tails together and set them on fire.
Dude, we should start a lawn.
There should be a fox fire weed eater company.
Foxtail lawn care.
Fox fire lawn care. A fox fire lawn service.
Gosh, that's great. What a great story.
Yeah.
I wanted to see it.
Yeah.
Like, did he actually, I'm trying to remember, he set their actual tails on fire?
Do you think that's a metaphor? Do you think he really did that?
No.
Do you think that happened? But he had to catch the foxes first.
Right.
Which, that's tough.
Guys, isn't that just like our lives? Or, by the way, hold that. No. Hold what I want to tell you later. Remind me to tell you about catching foxes.
Is this going to be
it's
like an old dating story?
Something that happened.
And then just like our marriages, trying to catch a fox.
I caught a fox 20 years ago this year.
And she set me on fire?
Wait a second.
Wait, hold on.
I've been weed eating ever since.
What was that story? Remember the burning bed? That was one of the first big TV movie of the week, Farrah Fawcett. And it was based on a true story where she's the abused wife. She sets the bed on fire, killing her husband. And she didn't get jail time.
Wow.
Because she proved the abuse or whatever.
Yeah.
It was called The Burning Bed. And I don't know. Yeah. That's not a metaphor. That happened.
Yeah, I never saw that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I do think that Samson, I think that, again, that was part of the whole, if you don't believe he did that, then you don't believe he actually also picked up the gates of the city or that he killed 1,000
Philistines
with the jawbone of a donkey. So, yeah.
That's some John Wick stuff right there. You don't know John Wick, do you? You've not seen those.
I don't know him personally.
No.
But.
Well, he's not real.
No, I never. You know what? I haven't watched John Wick.
Those are ultra violent.
Somebody's screaming right
now. It's like cartoonic violence.
Isn't it almost like Quentin Tarantino violence?
Yeah, it's in that vein of people exploding.
Yeah.
And he'll just grab anything in the room, a shovel, and kill 12 people with a shovel. And so it's very.
Right.
He's Samson. He's a modern day.
Wow.
Samson.
Wow.
But the original movie happens because he's trying to get out. He's a professional killer. And he's quit, and somebody breaks into his house, and he's adopted this little puppy, and they kill his puppy.
Oh, no.
That's it. He's like, I'm back. So it's like it sets him
off.
This
is real. You're telling me the real
plot.
He goes
hunting down the people. This would be, what if I just made that up, and you're like, John Wick is about a guy?
It seems, so for real, it's about a puppy.
In essence, that's what sets him off and sends him back into that world,
because
he's getting out.
I'm not being insensitive to puppies.
No.
Usually there was a greater crime than that causes the
assassin. Well, he stole his car. There's a whole thing. But, yeah, they vandalize his home. But all he's got left in life is his puppy.
Wow.
They took the... And it's like, it's over now.
Enough is enough.
Yeah, and Keanu just... Mm. He's not having it. He goes... So, yeah.
So, at the beginning of all of the sequels, do they come back and do something else to him? Because surely there's a resolution at the end of the first movie.
It's different pets, though. The part three, it's a gerbil. And he's just like, he's kind of just miffed. He's not as mad. He's just like, oh.
He's like, but they're paying me so much to make this movie.
Yeah. He's like, well, I hate buying those dumb food pellets anyway. So he kills two people. Part three's not as... It's not as strong.
Didn't do as well at the box office. So speaking of chasing foxes, we have a dog, a puppy.
Mm-hmm. Ace.
Ace.
He's not really a puppy anymore.
He's a year. He just passed a year.
That's a dog now.
Yeah, he's now a dog.
Because that's as big as he's going to get, because dogs grow. That's it. They're done in a year.
Right. Brutus is about to pass 15, by the way.
Holy next month, moly. Yeah.
He's blind as a bat.
Oh, is he?
Yeah. His cataracts. So he knows he can see shapes and stuff. I mean, I know because I ask him.
He can see
shapes. What shape is this, Brutus?
He's like, triangle? Yes, it's a triangle.
He said right angle. It's hard
to
tell.
He's got a protractor.
In his Scooby voice. No, you know, I can tell because he'll run up to me.
Yeah.
And it's so funny. He just starts hopping, hoping I catch him and pick him up, you know, because he's not real sure where I am. He just kind of sees my shadow, you can tell. And then if you reach out and pet him, he kind of jumps. So, like, he knows you're there, but he's not sure if you're reaching for him or whatever.
Poor guy.
So I just catch him in midair all the time. And he falls off the bed all the time. Anyway, he's doing fine. He's doing fine.
Lord John.
Yeah, he's doing great. I mean, he just sleeps about 18 hours a day. So, during quarantine, it's been good for him because me and him spend a lot of time together.
Yeah, that's true. The dogs are loving it. I bet cats are ready for us to get back to work.
Please, yeah, get out of my house, they're saying to themselves in a cat voice.
You never see a cat video of, like, the vet returning from war.
Right.
You know, the cat running up, and it's never that. And just like, it's just like, oh, well, thanks. Thanks for our freedom and everything.
I hate that on America's Funniest Videos, whenever it's always the dogs playing, doing something cute or whatever, mm-hmm. and it's always the cat, like, scratching a baby in the face, and the crowd laughing. I'm like, what? Why do
There's
we laugh
way
at that?
Too much crotch related humor that, like, I feel like they moved us towards a darker place in society. Because, you know, it's like before we saw videos, like we knew people were getting kicked in the crotch.
Right.
But then people got kicked in the crotch and won $10,000. And
now we're staging it.
Right. People are staging. Yeah. People like are just suffering irreversible damage.
Oh, my goodness. I will say it has changed Sadie's viewpoint of pranks in general because, mm-hmm. you know, you'll see somebody put whipped cream on somebody and they wake up. And so, like, this morning she had her friend Aubrey stayed over last night, and Aubrey woke up later than her. And I mm-hmm. caught Sadie walking down the hallway with a can of whipped cream to wake up Aubrey. And I said, hey.
We don't waste whipped cream in this house. Give me that.
All I could see was either me running out of whipped cream or me having to wash the sheets.
You have two separate cans. You have prank whipped cream and you have regular whipped cream. Like, which can is that?
Don't touch daddy's regular. So the dog.
Yeah.
So he's, I don't know. I can't say. I'm a horrible trainer of dogs.
Oh, like, no. We knew that.
It's more like Brutus and I have a lot of understandings and patterns. You know what I'm saying?
He's like, I'm going to poop where I want.
Right. And you're going to clean it up. Yeah. And so, you know, but Brutus was always very congenial, docile, complicit. Compliant is the better word, not complicit.
Yeah.
And he was complicit, too. We committed so many crimes.
That's right. He's in on it. He's an accomplice.
But he's so compliant, you know, and Ace is not. Mm-hmm. He's not compliant. Now, he's super sweet, you know, but he's just mischievous.
Rebellious.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how Daisy is in my house. She's a troublemaker. She's impish, but she's kind of funny, and funny goes a long way in my family.
Yes, and he's funny, and Sadie loves him, and he's a puppy and all those things. He was a puppy, but he's still small, so you know, he's like 10 pounds. So, but if he gets out, he's dangerous. He doesn't understand. We have this fenced-in backyard where he can't get through the fence because I put up a little smaller fence where he can't get through. But
so you have a tiny, smaller fence within your fence.
Well, I took zip ties, bought
You've
like,
created a kingdom just for Ace. Well, within your larger kingdom.
I made it for Brutus whenever we moved in because he could slide through, and occasionally he would get out.
Yeah.
And, you know,
if he got out, it'd be no good. He's blind.
Well, he was probably mostly blind the last time he did, probably a year and a half, 2 years ago, and we couldn't find him for half a day. I just thought he was gone, and I found him in a driveway on the far end of the – it's not even really a neighborhood, just, you know.
He was jumping in the air for a random person
catch me. Yeah. And so when I say jump, he can't jump high. Like, he's got arthritis and stuff, too. But listen, he's doing fine. Yeah. Brutus is fine. And so Ace – I was walking in from a run. I had picked up the mail. Laura was out opening because Amazon just delivered too. And so we were standing there, and she made the mistake of opening the screen door for a second. And sometimes he'll just stand there, and he ran for freedom out the front, not where the back fence is.
Oh, man.
This has happened now multiple times. He has no, like, fear of the road. He doesn't know to be afraid of the road. Runs in and out of the road. And now, used to, he'd go get peanut butter. In fact, for a while there, he was, you know, puppy. I would take a stick. Hey, Ace, look what I got. And he'd come up to you, you know, and
now he
trick
doesn't
him.
Know.
No, he's so smart. He's learned every one of the tricks.
Oh. He's won't, like, it's not worth it.
Yeah, he won't come for food.
I'm not trading freedom for peanut butter.
Exactly. He's like, I know what you're doing. I'm not going to do it.
You're going to give me the peanut butter anyway when I come home a day from now. He's got like one of those little like bandanas on a stick over his shoulder. He's just like headed for the hills.
It's weird. I don't know how he...
Then he names random shapes that he thinks he sees. Rhizoceles? Yes, that's a...
Yes, that's a rhizoceles. And so the dog, I made Laura get in the car because a car in the street in front of our house will stop other cars or else he'll just run right and run. And so the dog's about to die. Like, I know it's going to happen. And I sprint chased that dog for about 20 minutes. I probably ran another mile and a half sprinting behind him. And I'm sure the neighbors have laughed.
Well,
the neighbors have let me know.
He's little, so what if they don't see him and they just see you darting back and forth? They're like, what workout is John doing?
In someone else's yard.
Yeah.
I won't tell you, he's fast. Like, he is, Sadie can't catch him, lightning fast.
Right.
And so, I basically chased him around so long, we finally got into the backyard, around the back of the fence.
And then you beat him within an inch of
his
life.
Then he came in, I still couldn't catch him, and I finally went to my neighbor's yard, and Johnny, I stretched out like an NFL wide receiver.
Yeah.
Like, I'd run for so long, I was never going to catch him, and I dove. And rolled up, snatched the end of his leg, kind of like stunned him for a second enough to stop, and grabbed him. And he and I were both. I was covered in all these burrs. He gets all these burrs in his fur.
Geez.
Had to put him. His paws were black because he's a white dog. Had to put him straight into the shower and bathe him. And I had to cut about 50 burrs out of his fur because I couldn't get him out with a brush or anything. Johnny, he was like a little fox that I was chasing around the yard. If you would have seen me, I did wonder if my neighbors saw.
Yeah, what if they don't see
when
him?
When I just dove into their yard. I literally dove and rolled. And I mean, I actually cut my arm a little bit, but I got him. Johnny... That's finely tuned athleticism is what it is.
It's like they should do that for training. You know, wasn't that a training scene in the original Rocky when he's chasing the chickens around trying to catch a chicken?
Yeah.
That's you.
Yeah.
Except you don't have a prize fight coming up.
I don't.
For the world championship.
I don't.
You are going to spend your night cutting tiny burrs out of a
dog.
We need to ask God what burrs are all about when we get to heaven.
Yeah, well, why?
Burrs, mosquitoes. Like, I almost get mosquitoes because they're a food source for other things, maybe. Right? But couldn't he have rigged it to where...
They don't suck your blood first?
Yeah.
That'd be nice.
But maybe that's the whole thing, that bats need the blood, too.
Are they only a food source for bats?
Well, it's one of the big ones.
What about biting flies? Those come after me when I run sometimes.
Maybe those are all products of the fall.
You know what? That's a great question. You know what? Do you think that we ate meat before the fall?
I don't know, but man.
I know.
Maybe we didn't crave meat then either, though, because that's the thing is like, how weird would it be to. Because that's the thing we always say, like, are we going to have marriage in heaven? Are we going to have physical acts of marriage in heaven? Like, people always want to know that. And it's like, I'd be okay if there's not that as long as I don't desire it all the time.
Right.
Like, if my desire is taken away to be with my wife. Not be with my wife, but, you know, be with my wife. John, I'm trying to keep this PG.
You know what I'm saying? You guys can see Johnny's face right
now. If the desire is taken away, then it's not that big of a deal. But if you're up there and you're just like, you're telling me what? Like, and you're aware that you're just, that would be a bummer.
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously Jesus said there'd be no marriage in heaven. And I think that's sort of the theory. The theory is that earthly desire will give way to better.
But there's feasts, so we're going to want to eat.
See, I wonder about eating if it's necessary for survival. Like when
you mean even now?
I know it's necessary now. But like, was it necessary for Adam and Eve? And was it necessary for the glorified body that Jesus was in? We see him show up,
right?
But he's obviously walking through walls, coming and going between heaven and other places at that point. So when he ate fish with them on the beach, you know, and when he ate bread to prove that he was human... Was it just, I have the ability to eat, but a glorified body doesn't have the necessity of eating.
Right.
So you literally eat for the enjoyment of it or for the community of it.
Yeah.
Like, what would happen if he didn't eat? you know, what Adam and Eve were already eternal. You know, like that's that whole thing of were they now dependent upon the earth that was cursed in a way they weren't before? I think is that real question.
I like eating.
I think that you're supposed to like eating, and you'll always have an abundance. So maybe the question will never come up. So,
all right,
John, you're gonna get to eat in heaven. I believe that eating in heaven will be a big deal. I think it's going to freak out a lot of Baptists when they get real wine at the marriage supper of the Lamb. And they're going to be like, oh my gosh,
I can't. Yeah, what if everything up there is vegan? Because like you said, what if meat is a product of the fall? And they're like, yeah, we don't have meat up here.
Right. Here, have this tofu.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh no.
Enjoy your fifth salad of the day.
Yeah.
And John Hagee's up there going, I don't like this one bit.
I'd like to speak to...
I'd like to speak to a manager. I don't know why he made John Hagee all of a sudden a southern lawyer.
Why, I do declare...
I should have known the sixth blood moon predicted there'd be no gravy.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. It's a gravy moon. That's what they call that.
John Hagee. Prophecy. Have you seen his latest book, Gravy Moon? Oh, my goodness.
John Gravy. John Hagee fans are going to be sending his emails. Listen, we have nothing but respect for John Hagee. I don't know enough I don't have any opinion one
really
way or another about
John Hagee circle very
That's
much.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're probably not listening to this show if you're like a huge like John Hagee apologist.
Right, you might be. Which, when I said run in a John Hagee circle, I just pictured John Hagee running in a circle. Oh my goodness. Oh, that's funny. No, I don't know. You know, I think the whole idea of heaven that always gets me is how physical. Like we just assume, in fact there's lots of books written about this, not lots, but a couple that I think
one of them's the Bible.
Maybe you've heard of it. But this idea that heaven became so ethereal and spiritual to us, like those are the questions, like, well, what about the stuff I enjoy, or what about the activity?
Right.
All this, because we are, in fact, I actually disagree. Was it C.S. Lewis that said, "I don't have a soul.
Yeah.
I am a soul.
I think so.
I have a body."
Maybe it was Chesterton.
It was one of those two. Yeah, and it's a really great quote. You know, and when I started doing funerals, even my whole viewpoint of that has changed a lot. Like we say, "Hey, look, that's not Grandpa." Mm-hmm. There, Grandpa's not with us anymore, and I think that it kind of that viewpoint though has some theological merit, but it also has caused us to not really acknowledge that our bodies and spirits are connected on purpose by God. It's how we were created, and that's why God is going to resurrect this body. He's going to remake this creation. Mm-hmm. He's going to renovate it. He's not just going to destroy it and create something new. He's going to make it what it was intended to be and better after the end of things. So this like the end of things, Johnny, and the beginning of things. Am I right? So like I just think that's so interesting. Yeah, that like, for example, the question I used to get a lot as a youth pastor, when a dog died.
Yeah.
Will there be dogs in heaven? Well, and I used to... You know, there was a time when I was real young, you're like, well, that's ridiculous, and no dog doesn't have any souls, and doesn't have any, you know, and so...
Then you met Ace, then and you're like, that dog's going to hell. I don't know if any dogs are going to heaven,
my
that
goodness,
dog...
That dog, yeah. So, but when I had Sadie, I think especially, and those questions start coming up.
You know it means so much to,
And why does it mean something? And this goes back, we talked at lunch about common grace a little bit.
Yeah.
Common grace... refers to all the blessings of creation. It's a theological theory, often not even brought. All the blessings of creation that are all blessings of God, that the goodness of the Lord fills the earth, that, you know, even Paul goes on to say, I mean, Solomon says, they all say, from hard work to enjoying nature to, you know, the relationship that you have with your wife and all the things that it entails, to a good meal around a table, to, you know, all of those things are a part. If there is something good, every good and perfect gift comes down from the Father of lights, in whom there's no variation or shadow of turning, right? So every good thing has this place, it's God created. So like this idea then, if my daughter enjoys Ace, and it sounds almost like we're almost too spiritual to say this now. If my daughter enjoys Ace, if there's a good thing from, because we didn't create Ace,
right?
We didn't come up with the idea of Ace. Like Ace was an idea beyond us. Mm-hmm. And if it's good, not just if it makes her happy, but if you see, I see attributes of loyalty, of fun, of enjoyment. Yeah. There's just an enjoyment to creation that God intended. In fact, it also says in Scripture that we're made to know God and to enjoy Him. I believe actually maybe one of the Book of Common Prayer prayers. It, like this idea, I'm made not just to know Him, but in that there's this enjoyment. And certainly Jesus said, I've come that you may have life and that you have it like in its fullness.
Yeah.
Paul then saying, I tell you this so that your joy may be full. Like this idea that enjoyment and life that is full and fulfilled is actually God's plan, which is the reason why no one wants to come to Jesus often is we make it like all the human joys that are already expressions of His grace. We downplay them as unspiritual. We downplay them as physical. And not realizing, my dad would even say this to me. He was like, son, I mean, the human joys, the physical human joys of life are a part of what God's given you as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether it's in marriage or a good day of work or whatever those things are. So yeah, I'll say, Sadie, look, here's, I don't know if Ace is going to go to heaven or not, but I will tell you this. Jesus cares about you so much. He gave His own life for you. And Jesus cares about His creation. He's made it. He knows when a sparrow falls and all those things. And Jesus will listen to you and you get to ask Him anything you want. It's what the Bible says, now and then. You'll be imperfect, you know. So if you get there and your desire is still to have Ace, then guess what? If Jesus wants to make Ace again, He'll have no problem doing it. Like, and it makes heaven reasonable, you know, like, oh,
and
sure.
You can't spell grace without Ace. So I was in Knoxville this past weekend, and there is a dog training place there, like a little storefront.
Okay.
And it had the coolest name that I've ever seen. I meant to take a picture of it and put it on my Instagram, and I forgot. It was called All Dogs Go to Kevin.
Wow. That is perfect.
So, I mean, it's really great, unless the guy's name's not Kevin. That'd be kind of a bummer. You're like, oh my gosh, what a great name. They're like, I'm Jake.
Right.
And
I'm really creative.
It's just nothing rhymed with heaven, and so here I'm Kevin.
Oh my goodness.
But
All dogs go to Kevin.
Check it out, Knoxville people.
I wonder if all the dogs around there really do go to Kevin, though. Otherwise, it's false advertisement.
Yeah, and like, what if he has insidious purposes? We don't know. That, you
right.
know,
could what be
like
he want all the dogs
like a Pied Piper situation.
I think that we should be suspicious of Kevin because he had a witty, you know, idea. But we can't trust things these days, Johnny. You can't trust what's happening.
You don't know. You don't know.
No.
Pied Piper's kind of a dark one, too, right? He leads all the children up into the... till they pay him.
Is he not the one that led all the...
He got all the rats
lemmings
out.
Off the...
No, that's a... The rats, right? Doesn't he flute the rats away? And then...
I'm not up on my Pied Piper history.
He gets the rats out of the town, but all they got to do is just like, okay, now it's time to pay the piper. They don't pay the piper, so he takes all the children up into the mountains.
Is this a...
I can't remember how it ends either.
Is this Brothers Grimm or something?
I don't know if they then go, you know what, let's take up a little, let's do a little GoFundMe, let's come up with the money, and they get the money to him, or if it's just like, no, all the kids are gone.
Wow. Isn't that like the plot for Temple of Doom, Indiana Jones? All the kids were gone.
Oh, right. And he fork in the mines?
Home. Yeah. Yeah.
Man.
Isn't it?
You know, they had, that was another, the apology tour that's happening right now for like past plot lines that had like racial... tinged things that are that's happening right now in our culture, for better or for worse, it's happening. And so, which some of it's more egregious. Obviously, if you did something with blackface on your show, there's a lot of like comeuppance for that. But Spielberg spoke out about Temple of Doom and basically said that, you know, we chose these tribal stereotypes for our villains.
Yeah.
And they eat brains out of a, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and they've got a room that's just bugs, and they're okay with it. And it's like, it's the whole thing of like, he goes, I feel like it furthered this narrative of just like evil, uncivilized, dark-skinned people.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm reading a book about the history of that kind of thought in white Western civilization. And I think that there's like this viewpoint a little bit. I have heard some people say, well, you know, racism's always been... this way, it'll always be this way.
Yeah.
And I challenge that thought. I do think racism in terms of what's in your heart is a result of sin and the fall.
Yeah.
Along with lust and along with greed and along with 100 other things that are a result of that. So to that point, I think that that's a true statement, that this has been around since Adam and Eve in some form or fashion. This is a result of the fall and sin. But like institutional racism within our society... which I understand there's a lot of debate of people who think that doesn't exist. And so much of this, I have found in my world, like I studied this stuff my whole life as a history major, as one even writing different things. It's not really, I didn't know it was debatable like it's become. I didn't know it was debatable what had happened in our country's, especially inception, or what was debatable even in the 60s and 70s with redlining and other things. Like, mm-hmm. I really kind of thought that was more common knowledge, that of course there's still left over. I thought about yesterday, think about how World War II still affects us. Think about how it affected us from a industrial way, how it affected us with women going into the workplace, how it affected us with PTSD in ways that we didn't know, how it affected the family structure, how it affected the growth of suburbia. It affected the United States' power among superpowers, with the tension between democracy and communism that led to Korea, that led to Vietnam, that led all of that in the middle of the Cold War. Yeah. All of that is from this one event that really only lasted 5 years. And you go, none of us would, I think, today deny that there are long-term effects that you really just can't pull out of our experience. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think, and guys, please don't quote me on this. I'm not even sure the Pledge of Allegiance, it was either after one or two. Like, it wasn't a thing. Some of the things we even think of as patriotic, and in our lifetimes, they were just staples.
Yeah.
But those weren't always there. They certainly weren't there in the Revolution.
Right. The idea that before every school day would start, we'd get up and say this pledge to a flag.
Right. And the flag had fewer stars, and things have continued to always evolve.
And then didn't one president add under God to it?
I would have to go look up and have somebody screaming here. We can certainly fact check those things.
I think it was in the 50s. I don't remember.
But I mean, it's always been, again, the first 10 years, there was no constitution.
Yeah.
There was no president, of the nation. And think about the constitution saying that black people are 3/5 of humans and that's in our constitution in its original. So to say
life, liberty, and the pursuit of property.
Yeah. Pursuit of property is what John Locke said. And then Jefferson adapted to the pursuit of happiness.
Yeah.
You know, and you just think, of course, we passed an amendment when we became more aware of the better ways or another way to look at this, to say, hey, the original Constitution would not let women have the right to vote, among many, many other things. And so the founders put something in there called the Bill of Rights that granted elasticity to this document that they knew it would need the ability to evolve, though the structure would need to be able to stay the same. And so this idea that it's always been certain ways, whether it's the Constitution or whether it's our ideas on race or whether it's even the sin of racism, always been this way, I just was reminded, nothing has always been a certain way in our nation.
It's either getting better or getting worse.
And again, World War II is a great example. I am a living example of, you cannot, it systemically affects the way I see the world. I grew up seeing Nazis as the enemy on every movie. Why?
Yeah.
World War II. You can't extract from that that experience. You know, it's okay. It affects. Well, 400 years of slavery affects. And I know some people struggle. Well, we haven't even been a nation for 400 years. That's right. This was happening in the colonies long before that. And so that lets you know it was already a part in many ways, the slave trade before we were even a nation. But to say hey, I can admit that there are some things that we chose. There are some things that were done by we, I mean the nation, and that there were along the way events happened that they weren't that way before. And I think that brings you into that place of going, I mean, historically, it's just how it was. I'm not making that up. I don't think anybody conservative or liberal would admit that a law was passed in 1619. I believe it was in Virginia as a colony. And this is the backstory of it. It was fascinating. And sorry to nerd out on you, Johnny.
No, do it.
This, so it would have been very common. Lots of slavery in early American colonization was more indentured servitude.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was why, now that's in the colonies. The slave trade was actually way more predominant down in Central and South America, because they were working coffee and they were working sugar plantations, which was a much more labor intensive crop than tobacco or cotton. And so they were coming from Africa on these horrible slave the slave ships and what was happening on them, mm-hmm. the conditions, just deplorable. But there was a much greater need because they were dying much quicker. They were actually working men to death, and they weren't reproducing. It was actually creating a disparagement between the numbers of males and females. And so they just kept replenishing slave populations until eventually the slave population grew so much that, like in Haiti and other places, there were revolutions and they were able to overtake their white masters because it was just the way it worked.
Yeah.
The United States was a different ball game. It wasn't as labor intensive. And so therefore we began basically growing our own slaves. And so we have more of a history of that. People born into something who didn't have a recollection of being taken on a boat.
Right.
So they're less likely, you know, to revolt because they don't even know of another reality. Yeah. And so in 1619 in the colonies, it might be, I'm not saying there wasn't racism. Again, that's in the heart thing. But it certainly wasn't like an American racism or American system of slavery based exclusively on the color of one's skin. That actually wasn't the way it was in the Roman Empire. They had slavery there. It was almost always about conquered peoples.
Right.
You study your world history. One people conquer another, and then you always had some system of slavery that was, you know, servitude that you kept your name, you can keep your wife, you had a job. Often doctors and lawyers were slaves, but they mm-hmm. were family servants, and they, you know, were a part of it, and they might even earn enough money to buy out their own freedom for the debt that is owed or whatever. So, mm-hmm. you know, or pay back the educational cost, all those kinds of things. So it was not uncommon in the colonies for that to be the case. In fact, it was probably not common, but there were actually black freemen who owned slaves themselves,
yeah.
who were indentured servants, who were working their way, you know, paying their passage over from somewhere else or whatever. And then as the mission, this is why the church has to listen. This is why the church history matters. The church, the Anglican church here, because we're talking about English colonies, they wanted to obviously proselytize and make converts mm-hmm. of Native Americans and then of Africans who were now
right.
in the United States, or excuse me, in the colonies. But there was tension over this throughout church history. If you read the book of Philemon, okay, Philemon is a book Paul wrote to a slave owner, right? And he's telling him, I your slave ran away.
Onesimus.
Yep. Onesimus. Yeah, we used to talk about him a few weeks ago. And Onesimus has become a believer, and he's like a son to me. And I know you, Philemon, so I could insist that you do this by my spiritual authority, but I'm just going to ask you that accept him as a brother in the faith and no longer as a slave. I mean, let him return to you. And if there's any debt he owes you, I'll pay for it. Mm-hmm. Basically, what Paul says. It's a super, like, very progressive thing to say. Like, oh my goodness. I know Paul did say in other places, don't try to get out of whatever station in life that you're in and all those things. But Paul also, in that one case, made a pretty substantial argument for what the church did throughout history, which was you don't enslave fellow believers
yeah.
because you're now in the same family in Christ. So the missionaries were struggling to convert the African
right.
servants.
They couldn't reconcile the two
yeah.
ideas. Yeah.
Yeah. If we do this, we can't keep them as slaves anymore. Because, I mean, so understand, before that, it was different. That's my whole point of this. Before that, that's not how it was.
Uh-huh.
It was not always a black person in a white world equals inferior and someone to be used as a servant or a slave. That is not the way. Not that there wasn't racism there. That was not the system.
Yeah.
The system was created by a law. It began here in 1619 where they said, we now pass a law that you can baptize, because baptism was like one of the keys to, you know, professing salvation.
Uh-huh.
If you baptize your slaves, you don't have to set them free. Because up to that, they always had.
Right.
And the slaves even had to, when they gave their profession of faith, if they wanted to be saved, they now admitted out loud, I know this is basically my spiritual salvation, my spiritual freedom, but it does not entitle me to physical freedom from my master.
Oh, it's heavy.
And now suddenly, you have litigated. You know, you have made into
right.
law a system that you fast forward 50 years, mm-hmm. fast forward 100 years, and we all go, people just forget and think this is how things always were. And I think that's the nature of systemic things, is they are so long in your vernacular or in your thought process, much like World War II for us. And why is it that Nazis are my favorite enemy? when I watch a movie? Why is it that they're the easiest ones for me to root against?
Right. And they're like almost cartoonic.
Yeah. And again, they really were an evil enemy in this particular case and right. all those things. But we perpetuated that. That's a part of American thought. That's a right part of American thought, I think. It's just like, hey, that's why I didn't like, by the way, Indiana Jones, the Crystal Skull, because he was fighting the communists, which I don't think you're as good of an enemy. That was a Cold War fight, you know, and yeah. I wanted a World War II fight like all the other movies. So
more clear evil.
Yeah. Yeah. And it, you know, so, I mean, I just think that idea that things have always been this way, we have to know that's, we can think right. it has
we
been.
We are making history as we go. Yeah. We just are.
And the good news is if it's man-made, no matter how long it's been, it could be unmade and mm-hmm. adjusted. And that's really what the founding fathers intended. You guys will keep adjusting this through amendments, yeah. through these other things as life goes forward. And we did. And so I just think like...
Is this where you come after my guns now?
So...
John.
Johnny.
The Second Amendment clearly knew that we would have rocket launchers in every home. And AK-47s. They knew...
Well, you know, I'm a gun guy. I own guns.
I know you do.
So, yeah.
But you've got a gun drawn on me right now.
I don't own
and
rocket...
And I'm over it.
I don't own rocket launchers, but...
Would you like to shoot one? Just for fun?
I don't think I would. I think it would... I don't see... Yes.
Nate used to have a bit about that. Nate Bergazzi had a bit about how he was somewhere, and I want to say it was... I can't remember. Somewhere Middle Eastern country, and they had a thing where you could pay like $300 and you could shoot a rocket launcher at a goat.
Who had this?
And if you... Nate Bergazzi, he talked about it when he was on a USO tour.
Oh, okay.
And he was like, I don't know how they came up with that amount. He goes, they would give you your money back. They would give you half your money back if you miss, I think was part of it. He goes, and of course you miss. Who has shot a rocket launcher? It's like, no, I'm ready for this. I've been training. Of course I'll hit this goat. And it's just so funny. It was a cow, I think, because he said the other part of it was, for $50, you can go into the next village and fist fight a goat. So if you miss the cow, they have a voucher system. But, yeah.
No, I like the, I mean, again, I like shooting.
Well, that's part of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, that when it gets intertwined with, like, the gospel, of course, these white men that lived hundreds of years ago could have foreseen everything that we're going to be going through in this document. They built in some elasticity to it that we don't even take full advantage of. And if you start talking that way, people are like, oh, my goodness, what are you, crazy? There's already amendments to the Constitution as it is.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I'm not one of those guys that wants to tear the Constitution up. I think it'd be great to defend it, you know, from enemies on both sides of the aisle. I mean, I feel like there's an ideological cult on both sides of politics right now. People are getting so deeply entrenched, and both think that they're defending the Constitution, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
100% they both think that they're right, and so that's kind of where we're at a standstill.
Well, I gave a political science. So I have a degree in political science as well, and that was my minor, Johnny.
Yeah.
And what people don't realize, they really, really don't realize, and I'm sure all of our listeners do. I had this conversation with a friend the other day, and they're like, what? It's like, so we're so hung up on liberal and conservative right now, liberal and conservative. I mean, whether you realize it or not, because I mean, I would consider myself conservative, mm-hmm. and I've ran most of my life in conservative circles. And right now, the majority of conservative speak that I see online, the only thing worse than being a Nazi, only thing worse than being a killer is being a liberal.
Yeah.
Like, it is the boogeyman.
It's like a slur.
It's a boogeyman thing, and it's very fear. I read a post of the day that ended with, there will be concentration camps in America. Be afraid, !!
Because of liberals.
Right. It was all about liberal. This is all a liberal socialist agenda, and none of this is real. It's not really happening. And so the deal is, those of us, we started our podcast with the word, you know, trying to have some moderation, I think, in all things. hey.
Be like even-tempered.
Yeah. I mean, like, y'all know the political process is built on tension between two sides, that they're supposed to have some civility. That was how it always was. And so, Thomas Jefferson and John Adams did not agree, but they worked together.
Right.
Like, it's okay to work together. It's okay to hear another idea. You don't have to, like, scrap yours. But I was telling them, like, hey, did you know politically, or excuse me, ideologically, okay, we know what the far, far left of liberalism is. It is socialism.
Mm-hmm.
communism, socialism, right?
Right.
And that's why, you know, far, far, far left, everybody's scared of that. I was like, what a lot of conservatives really don't realize politically is that the far, far, far right is fascism.
Right.
That fascism is not liberalism. It's actually conservatism to the extreme. And so, like, Hitler wasn't a liberal. Hitler was a conservative. Mm-hmm. And the hallmarks of fascism, again, everybody listen to me. I'm not calling anybody a fascist. Again, you have to, everything requires a disclaimer nowadays. Like, yeah. I'm just giving, if I was teaching this class,
yeah,
it's just literally what it is. Before
I want you to name names.
So, far, far right says it's when you take political ideologies and you weaponize them on a conservative base. They look just like this. This is what Germany did in 1930. I mean, to a T. And right. It's what, by the way, they did in England as well. There were fascists in England, all across Europe. It wasn't just Germany. Yeah. Fascism says there is a group or multiple groups of people, and it can be based on race. For specifically the German Nazis, it was the Jews. It can also be based on class. You can call it the workers. You can call it the lower class. You can call it, I think right now as well, the liberals. Mm-hmm. Like, you identify, and some might call that the straw man or whatever as well. You identify somebody that now you should be afraid of and angry against, mm-hmm. and you generalize them as much as possible.
And they need to be dismantled.
And that it's all based on a pie, mm-hmm. and that means all the wealth in your life, all the things you have, is all finite. And that means if they keep gaining, again, that's when you start using they and us. If they keep gaining, then we are going to keep losing, yeah. as if one piece of the pie bigger makes another one smaller. And then another hallmark of it is you distrust all media. I literally read a post this week from a conservative that said all media will lead us down the wrong place. By the way, the irony is he heard that viewpoint.
He heard it on the media, and he's sharing it on social media.
On social media. Well, he actually said that, all social media and media. And I think I sent that to you. I was like, I'm just confused. If all social media is
only trust me.
This is the one voice.
My channel.
That's right. And it gets you to this place where you go, like, you don't realize that you're actually removing the ground from beneath your own feet as well.
Yeah.
And I agree the media can't be trusted. A lot of the media, there has to be a balance to those two thoughts. Mm-hmm. You have to be able to endure a viewpoint yours.
To me, the thing that's happened over the last probably 5 or 6 years, the mistrust of journalism, like the you know, we've seen some, and I'm trying to be aware that I know we have people from all sides listening to this, but the idea that if we can just get the journalists out of the mix, we'll all be happier. What we need is more journalists.
Right.
You know, you need more voices, not less. Like, when you have dissenting voices, that's America.
And I do agree with this. And for our friends who feel that way, I think you're right. And I do agree with this. I think there needs to be journalistic integrity that moves beyond just commentary.
Or just moves beyond, like, this moves my political ideology along, so I'm going to make sure I expose this. Like, Woodward and Bernstein exposed Nixon, okay? But they felt like it was their civic duty. It wasn't like, okay, there's a Republican in office, we got to bring this guy down because we're Democrats. This was like, they grieved over it.
Yeah.
Because it's the president. Like, I just watched a documentary about this, and that whole thing's fascinating.
Yeah.
Because it really, that's when our trust in government, you can really, like, point to that as when it was really chipped away.
Yeah.
That's a really, like, BC AD moment, mm-hmm. In politics and political thought, is like when we just started expecting less from our government.
Right. Or becoming suspicious about everything our government does.
When your president says, I'm not a crook, and you have evidence. Right. Pages of evidence that he is a crook. And you go, oh no, what if they're all liars? Like, that was a new thing then.
Yeah. It had to be so, and again, you and I weren't, you know, in those days, but it had to be so jarring.
Yeah.
You think we feel jarred now?
Yeah, the earth, the earth beneath your feet. Yeah, that's the thing, is like, the one thing we can always know is like, the president is a good man and he has our best interests at heart. And when you realize, wait a minute, it looks like he was just out for his own political gain, and he was taking shots at his political enemies. One of the things about Nixon that I did not realize was, even the stuff that he did was not just reduced to Watergate. Watergate was a month before an election that he had in the bag. because it was against McGovern. The things that were crazy to me was he set it up so McGovern would be the guy on the other side by doing political dirty deeds way back in the process to pick the Democratic candidate. He chose a weaker opponent by sabotaging Hubert Humphrey's candidacy and one other guy who were leading at the time. I mean, crazy stuff that he did. And so that McGovern would be like this easy reelection for him for the second term. And Watergate was just like the icing. Oh, we may as well do this. But the election was all but won. Wow. I mean, he was already leading in every poll by like, you know, double digits. It was crazy. And he's still like, he couldn't get enough. He's always meddling. And that's when they got caught breaking into the Watergate Hotel. And then they were linked to him. But it took years for all that to come to fruition. And all these things that could have gone wrong, and he would have gotten away with it. That's the thing, is like everything had to fall just the right way. And it still took, you know, a year and a half. But he had installed audio recording material where if you start speaking in the Oval Office, it automatically starts recording you. And he did that for his memoirs. He was kind of like an arrogant guy who thought, we're going to need all this for my memoirs. And that's really what undid him, because people still didn't want to believe that the president was capable of this, that it went all the way to the top. And those recordings is really what did it.
Wow.
When they finally heard him say, you know, here's the money we can pay off these people, because they were still covering it up, and he was willing to pay money from taxpayer coffers, basically, to keep these people quiet. And he said to one of his aides, like, well, I can get $1 million. Because the guy said, well, I threw a number out because I knew that would be like, if I say this, then he won't be able we'll have to just kill this cover up. And he's like, well, it's going to be $1 million probably. And he was like, well, I can get you that. Like, and once he said that, and it was Nixon that said it, on audio tape that was pulled from his office, it's like, that's when you just go, that's the moment of like, oh no, our president is a crook.
Wow.
And I think but it's fascinating to think, like, we know we're fallen people, but I think there's an expectation of moral authority that comes with being the president that we just don't expect anymore. And I think it started there, maybe.
You know, I agree. I did that interview on Allison's podcast about Kennedy, and she asked, you know, when did I think very similar question, when did some of those things start changing? I said, well, I think the number one thing when it started changing, the question specifically was about people's expectation of being able to know more personal things about the president or have more access to all of it. I think it started with the death of Kennedy. It was like an event in media that everybody was suddenly present for, and I think it certainly continued then with Nixon, with the distrust of it, that now we had an expectation that you completely blew out of the water, and that I think Reagan restored some of that in at least in our minds. We have this probably euphoric viewpoint as children of the 80s and 90s.
Oh, sure.
Know, of how things were, but knowing there were people, it wasn't all, you know.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, reading some of that stuff too. Yeah, you read like trickle-down economics and, you know, it was great for some people, and some people, like, they just spent that whole decade being trampled underfoot, you know?
Yeah. Well, and again, I think that, again, I'm at the place in life, and I think the founding fathers would have said this, that the expectation that a political party, that a system of government, that a law, that all these things are going to somehow, whether it's far right, far left, either one, if we all had our perfect utopian political concept, this is where my citizenship as a believer overrides all that. I'm like, guys, it's not going to fix the human problem. And that's what governments are really trying to do. Now, we need to be responsible to do what's right at every turn to continue the improvement of things. Mm-hmm. So I do believe in correct legislation. I do believe in justice. And I believe that all those things are embedded into our culture, though they weren't embedded for everybody. In the beginning, literally, the Constitution just said this does not apply to this group of people. Like, it did say that, and we had to change that. And then when we changed it, we still didn't enforce it for about 100 years. So we had to add more laws so that it could be enforced, what was supposed to be right the whole time. That's a part of our history that's still pretty recent. It just is. It's still pretty recent. I know it feels like it's not to a lot of us, but again, if you study history, honestly— our nation is maybe one of the oldest lasting democracies. It's still one of the youngest nations. Like, you know, understanding in a couple hundred years is really not that big of a deal in terms of history. Certainly not a big deal in terms of eternity. But I just think, hey, I'm not expecting, whether I'm a conservative or a liberal, I'm not expecting either one of them to solve the human problem. What I'm expecting them to do is to best represent politically where morality or where legality falls for me and for the most amount of people in this nation. I expect them to have that integrity to those things. But I'm never going to find one that is exactly. In fact, I would think it's dangerous if you have a candidate in your life on right or left that is like exactly everything you're looking for, everything they say, then, you know, is exactly what you think is right. Then I'm not sure that anybody in history, you know, besides George Washington, maybe. I mean, everybody, you got to realize George Washington is the only one everybody loved. Mm-hmm. He's the only one everybody loved out of presidents. You could say Abraham Lincoln, but the truth was they hated him so badly that when he got elected, the Civil War broke out because mm-hmm. of his election. Like, you got to realize that there has been dissonance in this process since the beginning. The only one that, and I'm sure he had his enemies as well, but the only one that politically nobody ever tried to do anything against was George Washington, and they wanted him to go longer. But they were still coming out of a king mindset, and he also rejected that. That's why they loved him more, in his humility. So I just think our expectation of politics is that it's going to give us something more. Look, we need to cry out for justice, and we need to, you know, cry out for the law to be right.
Yeah.
And you can have a balance in both of those sides. And I just think summing people up into liberalism or conservatism,
so you can dismiss them.
Right. It's a label I'm not going to accept anymore. I'm just not. Those two labels, like, if I get, you know, categorized for the purpose of not being heard, I mean, you know, it doesn't do any good. It may keep both of us from hearing an idea that we may not agree with, but that might move us down the road a little bit, because hearing ideas, the moment, again, you begin to suppress ideas,
that's a fascist
That's why they burned the books. You know, they burned the books, and they said all media can't be trusted. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was a part of it. Don't read, don't listen to anything except your own viewpoint, because they're out to get us. Be afraid, be afraid, be afraid.
Right.
And you don't realize how much that froths up over a couple years.
Yeah.
To where you begin to really instinctively believe that, whether it's the liberal or whether it's someone of a different color or someone of a different religion or whatever, that
they're out to get you.
They are. And we do have national enemies, and they're terrorists and all those things, but we're talking about fellow Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the bottom line. The liberal side can do the exact same thing. Communism and fascism end up at many of the same places.
Oh, sure, yeah.
They end up with a very few people controlling the majority of power and wealth. They both mm-hmm. end up there. They end up in a place where it is thought that if there's forced, distribution among the worthy— it's all a question of who's worthy.
Right.
They just both are just disagreeing.
Who's worthy? right.
But let us decide who's worthy instead of, like, having a respect for the people. Look, I mean, people in this nation don't look like me in a thousand different ways. And as a believer, mm-hmm. my call is to love them, and my call is to, as a citizen, my call is to stand next to them, not opposed to them.
Yeah.
That's a United States thing, Johnny. That's why they use that word.
I think the only books that I'm in agreement with burning is the enormous amount of copies that you have left of Letters to the Other John.
You know, did you hear what happened the other day?
Wasn't that a book you wrote about youth ministry?
I didn't write a book.
And then you have a lot of them left.
So
how many are left? Like, how big would the fire be?
So I wrote a book for our new youth pastor, whose name John.
Yeah.
And I called it Letters to the Other John, because I thought, I'm going to forget all this stuff. And it was like my 15 years of youth ministry in a book. Now, he's probably the only one that read it. But the deal was the printer messed up.
Right.
So we had 1,000 copies because...
Which makes them more valuable. It's like a misprint baseball card.
Well, the guy I was working with was... He had a great idea. He's like, y'all messed up all these covers, just slightly misprinted. It was just like a positional thing.
Okay.
He goes, look. And they said, well, we'll reprint you another 1,000, and we'll sell these to you for $1 a piece.
Yeah.
So I could be sitting on top of, Johnny, Because, again, we were starting to do some events. We were talking about youth ministry and stuff. That's before I realized I probably shouldn't be talking about youth ministry because I'm changing all my ideas right now.
Yeah.
Oops, wrote a book. And so I had 2,000 copies for next to nothing.
Yeah.
And as of 2 weeks ago, I still had those two. I've tried to throw them away. And the church staff won't let me. They're all like, well, let's donate them to a youth ministry program at a college or whatever. Nobody knows or cares or wants to read that. And I was like, let's
people don't read books you give them usually either.
Right. Let's go dump by a guy you never heard of about youth. I mean, back then, some of that was even pre-Facebook stuff. Like, I'm like, take a picture of a kid and put it in your phone, you know.
Oh, yeah, and MySpace. So, right. You're making a MySpace reference.
It was a little dated.
Get on Friendster.
GodTube. and so... Sorry to the creators of GodTube. And
is
so,
GodTube still a thing?
I don't know.
It can't be.
I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah. And so the other day, guess what? Johnny, I mean, it's almost like as if one more thing in 2020. So they're downstairs in a storage room right now below us.
Yeah.
And the water fountain randomly burst. A hose inside the water fountain has been there for 15 years, randomly burst 2 weeks ago, and no one was here for it. And it flooded that whole entrance area and went in and flooded the books. The books were one of the first thing it got to.
And they swelled up like macaroni.
Yeah, so they...
Now you can't get into the closet.
There's one box left right over there, and they brought me one box, and finally, Letters to Other John got thrown away. So the rest of them, they threw away because they were half of them were ruined and stuff. So, yeah. I mean, I'm going to tell you something. When God sends a flood, you know your book's bad.
That's what,
he's like, look, these can't even stay in existence.
I said I would never flood the earth again. I didn't say anything about a closet.
<That's right. laughs>
That book had to go.
When we see this kind of evil, it's got to be stopped. Yeah. So anyway, yeah, they're gone.
Sorry.
Yeah.
But that's not fascism. That's a bad...
Floodism.
That's a bad water fountain.
Yeah.
It's happened. It's just happenstance, probably.
Yeah.
Although, are you one of the people that says there are no coincidences?
Oh, man.
Because that's not true, right? That can't be true. There's coincidences.
I think there's nothing unknown.
Like, if you see somebody in the store and you're like, oh, my gosh, that guy I hadn't seen in a while. Do you think that's like a divine, everything that you see is a divine appointment? I'm supposed to go interact with that person because I could be the thing that, that'd be a weird thing, right?
I think that, everything today is about being center.
Yeah.
If you believe there's never a moment you encounter someone that perhaps God is not wanting you to make this a significant moment, then that's also a problem.
Right, that's
if you believe every moment is, then you and I've known people, and you have too.
Yeah, yeah.
There is a side of religion that does that, that makes
you they pray before they, what should I eat today, Lord?
Right, Lord, is it the Fruit Loops?
I'm getting a cheese sandwich feeling.
I really have known people who, and they were enslaved to that. It wasn't freedom.
Uh-huh.
They were so afraid to make a decision.
Didn't we know somebody who threw a dart at a dartboard or walked on a map until they landed, and then that's where they moved?
Yeah.
I
think we did.
They moved their whole family?
Yeah. And I'm not saying some things like that don't happen. I just think that's why God gave us Ezekiel and Proverbs. Like, somewhere in between, there is a moment.
He did not give us Ezekiel bread. I'll tell you that, because that stuff.
That's nasty.
Get out of here with that.
Yeah. I mean, he wants you to use wisdom. And be able to make decisions. You're created in his image. You're an image bearer of God. So you're supposed to grow in wisdom and stature and favor with God and man. You grow. You learn. You listen. You pay attention. You don't think you're wise in your own eyes. You learn to control your words. You evaluate sources. You surround yourself with trusted counselors.
Yeah.
This is what we do. This is actually called becoming a greater or a more mature disciple. And then along the way, Jesus will also bring thoughts and thoughts, whispers to your heart and things from God's word that jump off the page and a moment in a sermon that it felt like it was directly for you.
Yeah.
And you don't have to, you're free in both areas. And if one enslaves you, because I get enslaved sometimes in both, like, you know, maybe that's what I'm supposed to do, but it doesn't seem right in wisdom. You know, like there is some tension there.
Or like we grew up in a culture where everybody had a word for you.
Yeah.
So now if somebody really had a word for me, it would be hard for me to hear it because I've been given so many flaky words.
Yeah.
So that's kind of another thing is you overcorrect to the other side, maybe.
Absolutely. I struggle with that, but there have been some words that were right.
Yeah.
And it's hard for me to admit that.
Sometimes you walk on the map and you're supposed to go to Nevada. No, that's not. That's never, please don't do that. Your family.
It's a strange. I do believe in that it's one of those things like God's not confined to anything. Mm-hmm. God can speak right now out of the clouds if he wants to. God can, you know, lay a word on somebody's heart. And I think there's a place for that in the body of Christ. There's a place for that. I think some people make that their religion and the centerpiece. I will say this. I won't receive probably well words that somebody's offended because I want to test it.
Yeah. Or if it's not from somebody who you already are in community with and they're just like, hey, I just met you, but here's a warning. Like, okay, back up.
Yeah. Yeah, I've had those before. Yeah.
You don't know anything about me, but now you're going to try to read my mail or whatever.
We should talk.
I would have a hard time with that.
We should talk another time about people who almost every one of their words happen to deal with either a Jezebel spirit or an Absalom spirit, which are not even, in my mind, actual, like they're actual people in the Bible. They're characters in the Bible, but I don't even know what I mean by that. But that's a real thing among a lot of charismatic circles. Like, that guy's walking in an Absalom spirit.
Well, a Jezebel spirit usually means, like, a woman with opinions.
Right, yeah. It's kind of like getting political means we don't like your politics. Right,
she's got that Jezebel spirit. Yeah. Oh, what is she? She wanted to vote and everything. Like, she
disagreed with my decision as a leader.
She is a problem.
Yeah. Like, I think, again, there's that insecurity of things. And when you go and weaponize biblical, I have known lots of women, especially over the years, who were greatly wounded by things like that from spiritual leaders who, honestly, like, guys,
they wouldn't have been, they were held to a standard that if it was a man, they'd be like, man, he's such a go-getter. But if it's a woman, it's like, they're expected to be, you know, just more demure and more reserved. And it stinks.
Or pastors who had young men who were trying to figure out, they were strong, gifted leaders trying to find their way, and they had a chance to grow together. And instead, well, he wants my job. He's, you know, and it's like, man, you know, it's, you get to help steward the process. And instead it was about you. It was about your position, you know, and those things. So you had to hurl an Absalom spirit at the guy, you know, when Paul never used the terms Absalom spirit, or Peter didn't, like, not one disciple in the New Testament used anything like that. You're probably taking the Old Testament completely out of context here.
I think I want to remember, I'm more like Washington. Like, they wanted me to run for a third term. That's how beloved I am. And I was like, you know what? No way. And they're like, that makes you even a bigger hero to us. And they carried me off on their shoulders. That's how I picture it.
And wooden teeth. Oh, yeah. Man. Yeah. Think about it. You just get them replaced every few months. Is that what you were going for? I don't
know.
You didn't.
The big powdered wig, though?
I don't get the powdered wigs, although I'm bald, but I think
is that about, what is that about? Is that about, like, a look, or is it about keeping bugs off your head? What is the powder?
I don't know. What do they put on?
Although, you know what? Curry told me that we were wrong about Morning Constitutional. Because she said, I watch British shows. Morning Constitutional is a walk. And I felt so dumb. And then I looked it up. It is. We were both right.
Okay.
It's a walk to the bathroom.
To remember.
It's a walk to remember. Because it's for when outdoor plumbing was a thing. But it's all about, Morning Constitutional is about something that's good for your health. Yeah. Which, that was, everything was bowel oriented back then. It was always about cleansing and, you know, you go to these weird, like, weekend things where they would just all do colonics. This is a whole thing.
Yeah.
The whole Kellogg's company was all about this, you know, crackpot that loved this stuff. And he was all about, like, if you keep your bowels clean, you can. So the Constitutional, we were both right, kind of. I was probably 80% right. She was 20% right. Because she's like, it's a walk. I'm like, well, it's a walk, but it's a walk to go relieve yourself.
Wow. You just made a percentage of your rightness.
Well, I just wanted to, I want everybody to know that she was right, but I was
just
more
not
right.
As right as you were.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's,
I can't wait till this airs.
As a moderate, that feels right. Like,
speaking of, it's Johnny's birthday this week.
I'm about 80% right.
And on your birthday week, you could be 80% right. Yeah. Curry, give him a break. You know what I'm saying?
It's true. My birthday yesterday we had my birthday. Or 2 days ago, we had my birthday observed, because on my actual birthday, we went to Knoxville to hang out with my twin brother. And we did have a great day. I hung out with my niece, Nettie, who's amazing, who my brother adopted. She's the sweetest, and she's so fun now. And now she's like calling me Uncle Johnny. Uh-huh. And I was pushing her swing, and I had her held back, and I was going three. And I let her go on her tire swing, pull her all the way back. She's like, we're going to fly to the moon. And then right as I'm getting, I go, 3, 2. And she goes, Uncle Johnny. I go, yeah. And she goes, I love you.
Oh my gosh. Your heart.
I'm going to pay for your college. It was too much.
Yeah.
I couldn't take it. So we're doing all that, and then we're all going to go to dinner, and we're trying to, like, time it, because Nettie's a little bit, like, restaurants can be tough sometimes. Yeah. She's, you know, she's 3. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, I don't want her to melt down. It's close to her bedtime by the time we get out there. And then we realize, playing in the yard with her, my keys are gone.
Mm-hmm.
where they're gone. We can't find them. And my brother's grass was all high. And I'm like, they're gone. We have to call AAA. We waited for AAA for 2 hours. They had to make a new key. It's a computer key. It's a whole fob thing. Mm. So that's $200. And I'm just like, oh, happy birthday. So by the time we went to dinner, she was great at the restaurant, though. And then we got home. We drove all the way back that night. And so Carrie made it around the 23rd, because my birthday was the 22nd. She was like, we're going to have your birthday for real, for me and you on the 23rd. That's your birthday observed. So I thought that was nice.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so we had my birthday observed the 23rd. And then the 24th is like still, there's some still reverberations of birthday.
Yeah.
Love that happens. That's good.
Yeah.
So today, being that this is the 25th as we record this, I feel like I should still have, there's a, like you took me out for lunch.
I did.
You paid for my lunch. Still a little birthday.
I tried
love.
To get them to bring you some ice cream or something, but they didn't do that there.
No, I didn't. And I was too full.
Yeah.
Although I think you wanted to go. You had a burger today.
And fries. And I ate it all. I was watching you watch me eat it.
It was.
Like, you're like, it was like a man like returning to an addiction.
Sparks, shrapnel coming off.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Wow.
I'm a little off the wagon.
You look good, though.
I need to get. It's not about even the look. Like, I told Laura last night, I feel so much better, not just physically. I feel better psychologically mm-hmm. when food is not controlling me.
That's maybe a thing, but is that because you have a hang up about if I have a burger, that means food is controlling me versus I can have a burger without it controlling me?
I've controlled me my whole life, so I have to have, I just know, here's, the food is a thing for me. Like, it's not for everybody.
But I'm saying, having one burger, you don't, I've failed now.
Yeah, but also had pizza last night before bed after I'd already had a steak for dinner. You
so
know what I'm saying?
Maybe you did fail.
Right. Sadie's making homemade cakes from scratch, left and right.
The way I feel is, you're a couple of good constitutionals away from scratch. You're right back where you start. You know what I'm saying? You're back
to
normal.
That's my fear. I did so much work. I was like keto for a year and a half. I can't throw it all away. I'm still running, but it's harder. I can't run as far. I'm eating like this. It's like, oh, my body's like, what are you doing? We can't do this.
Your body talks to you that way?
It does. It's really strange. It's like in my headphones. Hey, by the way, and we gotta get off here, but I'm gonna tell you guys, I did have a book release this week. It was postponed because of COVID, but my friend TJ Stevens and I wrote a book called Once a Shooter, and it is a book. So TJ Stevens in 1983 was a troubled 17-year-old young man who walked into a school in Virginia and opened fire. He was suicidal. And he did not hit anybody with any bullets and ended up taking some hostages and had an incredible story of redemption. Went to jail and a lot of things after that. He actually has kind of hidden the story for the past 36 years, but he became a believer. And really, if you read the story, he was really rescued by Christ in his moment of when he was right on the edge there. It was some pretty crazy stuff that happened to him. And his story after that was amazing. He went on to do things that people didn't know that he, you know, who he was.
Right.
He hid his identity, you know. Huh. But he ended up playing Jesus in a passion play that was in the middle of Washington, D.C., in front of millions of people and talking to senators. He did it for years. And his only condition was, because they just randomly asked him to do it because a lady had a dream about him, you know. And he was like, I'll do it if you don't ever tell anybody my name. So for years, millions of people watched him as he, you know, just crazy experiences about, you know, portraying Christ in front of people as a guy who had
would be
the lowest,
past.
The lowest of society.
Yeah.
And they would only ever call him the young man playing Jesus. That was so no one knew it was him. There's all kinds of news stories about it. He's supposed to be on the Today Show at some point, but he's going to be on Fox next week. He's doing a lot of interviews and things right now, but really great guy. TJ Stevens, the book is called Once a Shooter, released on Tuesday. So this will be last week for you guys listening today. You can go to Amazon, check it out, Once a Shooter. It's on my website as well, I think. Or you can go to my Amazon author page if you want, and you can find it there. I think it's linked there. So cool, though. We you know, we've been waiting on it for a few months.
Go check it out and leave a review from the book. It helps, helps people find it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's I'm proud of it. It's a great story of redemption and honor.
And he's doing a big, like, TV show tour right now, right? I've done like
he's
a
doing
lot
what he can
remote interviews and things about it.
Yeah, talked to him today. So great guy, great story of what Jesus can do in someone's life, you know, all of us. And so hey, that's cool. Check it out, and also check out Johnny's socials. We have been watching a lot of Johnny W. Comedy in
you
my
showed
house.
Me the other day that was you guys had movie night or whatever,
yep.
And that my my project, my special was chosen as, who chose it?
Sadie.
Sadie chose it.
Can we watch live at the Franklin Theater tonight,
Love that
Daddy?
Girl.
I said, yeah, we can.
Man.
She is doing your jokes every day. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
How's that going?
Oh, they're
great. Working out?
They're great. So, yeah, I got a few pointers for you.
Okay.
So, no, so, but yeah, go check out Johnny's Comedy, and you can follow us on social media and all the areas. You can always go to talkaboutthatpodcast.com, where you can share. That's an easy link now to share with your friends. You patrons will be excited to hear that you should be receiving, if you have anything coming, for the level of support you have, you should be getting that in the mail within the week, because it's in the mail. So I don't know
Hastily.
How long it takes. Yeah, yeah.
On its way.
Yeah. This is a little different than usual here, just in light of our stuff.
And we'll be putting gingerly on its way.
Gingerly. We'll be putting also together another Zoom call for you guys if you're
All
interested.
Right.
So maybe send us an email like, hey, I'm interested. You know, we'll see if you guys want to join us again to hang out and let Johnny do extemporaneous comedy. Because, dude, you were hilarious. I mean, it was unbelievable.
It felt like it was just us, nice, friendly.
It was like watching a master.
I think I roasted you a little bit, and I felt bad after. I was like, should I have roasted you? I felt like I kind of threw you right under the bus.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good for it.
It's just
good with it. All of it. It's fine.
All right, John. I appreciate that.
No problem. Hey, guys, we appreciate you listening. We'll see you next time.
Talk about that.
Have you ever considered yourself a messenger? I mean, you are called by God, and aren't we all praying the big prayer, "Here I am, Lord, send me"? So if we put two and two together, you've got a message to deliver, my friend. Whether it's mics like this, bookshelves around the world, stages to take, art to make, or businesses to build, it's time we start testifying truth unashamedly, creatively, and in love. My name is Tamara Andress, the host of the Messenger Movement podcast, which is designed to catalyze Christians to speak, write, build, and testify. I use my mic like a machete, so if you don't like to get your toes stepped on or pushed off cliffs to finally jump on in with Jesus, I may be too much for you. But if you're ready to turn your message into a movement and want to run with other messengers doing the thing at scale globally, search and follow the Messenger Movement podcast on your favorite podcast platform or lifeaudio.com today.